Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Felicia.
I'm Lauren.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
And I still sound like this, so just leave me alone. I'm sorry.
She's building her immune system, everyone.
Oh, God. The germs of the children. It's just crazy.
I just can't imagine if you were like in a kindergarten class. I bet there was just
it'd be worse.
No hope for you.
No. But for recommendations, we realize we have the same recommendation this week, so we can talk about it together.
And yes. That is
Pearl.
It's just so good. I had the best time.
Amazing. Like, my favorite thing, obviously, like, Mia Goth is so good, but also just like all the Wizard of Oz references.
Oh my gosh.
I was obsessed with that. Yeah.
I know. That scarecrow.
The scarecrow. It's so amazing. And just like her on the bicycle, and like she's like, I don't know. There's just something about it that like Ty West just like captured this like style of like old movies that are also like about an older time in America. It's like movies from the 1950s that are like about the 1910s.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know. It's just genius.
And all the performances. Yeah. And it was like, I feel like I don't want to give too many spoilers, but there's not a lot of movies that can be like unsettling and still kind of fun in that way. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, it was really dark and not like a fun slasher comedy thing. Like, it's just unsettling, but it still
but
somehow
also,
is fun.
So enjoyable.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And I always love movies that are like about movies or about showbiz or about like they're so fun and
like
makes
Ty
you feel
West
like
and Jordan Peele have like a lot in common, and like when they're just like, what is the word, cinephiles, like they're just like obsessed with movies, and so their movies are always about movies in some way.
Yes. Yes.
It's cool.
Definitely. And her performance was so great, and I loved the like, is it her cousin? I thought she was hilarious.
The blonde girl. I know. when she's just reacting. Yeah, this whole monologue, and this little blonde girl's just like, "What the fuck is happening?"
It's so good.
It's great. It's awesome.
I loved it. I always love those girls that it's like, you know, I don't know. She's like a very all American, you know, could be just
pie.
Like a basic performance, and she was so good.
Yeah, awesome. But yeah, that's our recommendation for the week. And
yes, go see it.
Yeah. And also, I guess we can just mention that, so this is a normal episode this week, and the next week is October, which is crazy. We actually, I'm sure it's not this way in Texas, but yesterday and today we've had like the first fall weather in New York, and I feel like alive again. It's like I feel like I can exist once more.
I am so painfully jealous.
It's like 100 degrees.
98 degrees today.
Damn. That's so hot. You could just be fall in your apartment.
I mean, our AC is blasting, I will tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
But we did this like medieval party I was telling Felicia last night. It was outside in 90 degree weather.
It was outside?
Yep.
No.
Long, velvet, thick, theatrical, medieval costumes.
Thank God there's
alcohol.
So
I'm ready for fall. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So bring on those cold temps and spooky time.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. But so in October, we're going to do – we did something sort of like this last year, but our October episodes are going to be a little bit more like deep dives on things that feel – Halloween-y or spooky in some way. So we're really excited about those.
Yes.
But for today, I'm doing The Goat Man, which is actually an urban legend from Maryland, which is my home state. I grew up
Amazing.
In Frederick. Yes. I grew up in Frederick, Maryland, and the Goat Man legend is from PG County or Prince George's County in Maryland. And it's exactly what it sounds like.
Had you heard of it before? Had you like heard
no.
of it from your Maryland time? Okay, just wanted to
I've
check.
Never heard of it, but it's but I did see there's been a lot of research that has been done on it at the University of Maryland, which is where my brother went to college. So I should probably ask him about it.
Yeah.
But no, this is not something I grew up with at all. But I was just looking into Maryland, you know, urban legends, and this one came up. So it's unclear like when the legend itself started, just by like, you know, word of mouth. But the first time it's mentioned in any sort of media is in the Prince George's County News on October 27th, 1971. And the writer, her name was Karen Hostler, did a deep dive on the Goat Man and the history of it in the Maryland folklore, urban legend scene, I guess. Mm-hmm. So the article was called "Residents Fear Goat Man Lives. Dog Found Dun-dun-dun Decapitated in Old Bowie." So this is sad. I love dogs. So does Lauren. But this is a creature that apparently is like known for killing dogs, which just makes me sad. It's such a bummer.
We're going to really have to strap in for this episode.
I know. I'm sorry, everybody. We should have a warning, trigger warning. So the article talks about the Edwards family who was looking for their missing puppy named Ginger, and they found Ginger decapitated, near Fletchtown Road. I know, it's just terrible. And this has kind of been like a rumor about the Goat Man, is that he's like kills dogs. I don't know why. So there's a lot of different ways that – sorry. And after that, so that was in October. In November of that same year, the Washington Post did an article about the Goat Man as well. So that's – it got like, you know, bigger stuff going on.
Yeah.
So in terms of what the Goat Man looks like, I mean, it's pretty pretty much what you would expect. The top half is man with some goat ears, and the bottom half is more goat-like, very much like a fawn. Very Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, except very evil and scary version where the fawn, what's his name? Thomas.
Yeah. Or Tumnus.
Tumnus. Yes. That's right. That's right. Is very sweet. This one is very, very evil. Ooh. So the way in which people believe the Goat Man came to be, the main story that I found mostly is this idea that there's this place called the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, and they say that there was a scientist there that there, and there's two versions of this, but it's sort of this like mad scientist, think like the Fly kind of thing going on, that he was doing an experiment on goats and accidentally mutated himself into a half man, half goat creature, like just like the Fly, who then starts attacking people and animals and whatever in that area. And the other version of that, and this one we have names, I don't know what these names are, I didn't research them, but a variation on this is that there was a doctor at the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center that was mixing DNA of a goat and his assistant's DNA named William Lotsford and put them together and then created this monster called the Goat Man.
Oh, wow.
So that's sort of the mad scientist version. There's another version of the Goat Man just kind of being this like hermit that lives in the woods. But other than dogs, the Goat Man is, and this is, you know, very classic urban legend, known to attack teenage lovers in cars, that kind of thing.
Oh, you got to get them.
Classic Lover's Lane. Yeah. Just why would anyone go anymore to Lover's Lane?
I feel like
at a certain point you would stop going if everyone was just dead.
Yeah, just go to like the Walmart parking lot. I mean,
yes, or the Waffle House parking lot. I mean, God, have some class.
Yeah.
So there's also in the 90s the Goat Man. There's this guy. His last name is Opsisnik. That he had written some articles and ended up writing a book about a bunch of different legends, and he talks about on the trail of the Goat Man. And tracked down the family, the Edwards family, who famously in that article had lost their dog named Ginger. And so the family said that basically they had seen this animal walking around in the night. And this is where the imagery gets pretty scary, which is fun. It was about 6 feet tall, walked on 2 feet, and was hairy. And they also noted it made a high-pitched sound like a squeal.
Ooh.
And – oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And he says – there's a quote here from April Edwards. And it says, people came here and called it folklore, and the papers made us out to be ignorant hillbillies who didn't know any better. But what I saw was real, and I know I'm not crazy. Whatever it was, I believe it killed my dog.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, dang.
That is sad. I feel like when people like get warped in the media or like, you know, they have to see what the media says about them. I feel like that
absolutely
would always be so
hard. It's terrible. Absolutely. And especially with these sort of urban legends that kind of take place. And this is before. So Prince George's County now is different than it once was. But this folklore and this urban legend comes from when it was a much more rural area. So then like, and I feel like that always happens with stories that take place kind of in the middle of nowheres, if you will. And there's always this kind of like, you know, hillbilly hermit in the woods, whatever judgment of like a group of people that live in these kind of areas. And
yes, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. So what else here? So like I said, this kind of started in the 1970s, but there's been a lot of sightings ever since. There was one, I think there's even a Goatman movie. So it's called, it's a short, I guess, from 2017. and I will say the poster is hilarious. There's actually a few. So there's the Goatman Murders, which says, you know, based on the legendary Maryland murders. And there's not a lot of like legitimate murders that I can find that are like placed to the Goatman specifically.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
There are. Yeah, it seems more legend, but there are like some things of like people blamed like serial killers or people or deaths in the area on the Goatman. But I'm not finding a lot of specifics on that. But the Goatman Murders, the poster is a very muscular goat man that is just a man that is more like the top half is goat and the bottom half is human on this particular one. Holding an axe and wearing some sort of denim vest, which I think is really fun and hilarious.
My God.
That's really good. And then we also have the legend of the Goatman, horrifying monsters, cryptids, and ghosts, which may or may not be a documentary of sorts. But Goatman takes the cover. He's got red eyes and he is wearing a shirt that it seems that he transformed into the Goatman and is bursting out of it with his Goatman muscles.
Oh my God.
I'm not really super
kind of sexy.
I'm not super clear on why they're making the Goatman a sex symbol in all of these movies. Because I didn't find that in my research, but I am interested. And there's also Deadly Detour, which is the Goatman Murders. And this, I will say, is probably my favorite. It looks like the poster of like a classic slasher or something. Goatman standing over a dead body. The dead body looks like a real person. The Goatman looks like a cartoon, but is once again shirtless, extremely muscular, with just a goat head thing on, holding some sort of weapon. Which is interesting to me because I feel like if I was a Goatman, I wouldn't need a weapon. Like, I guess I'm thinking more like werewolves. But the Goatman likes to apparently hold an axe or a – yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Strong hooves.
Yeah. And then this last one I'll mention to you. This is – I just found this on – I don't know what this is. This is a Bloody Disgusting article that says, soundtrack to the lost film The Goatman released. So apparently there was some UK film called The Goatman, which may have nothing to do with the Maryland Goatman stories. But they released a – like they released the album to it. And in this one, the Goatman has like his fingers are like foot long fingers.
Oh my gosh.
And I can't possibly imagine why that would be, because that doesn't seem goat or human like to me. But you know, so that's it. the Goatman from Maryland, you know, it's not a long story, but it did inspire what I'm gonna do for one of our October episodes, which is Baphomet, or like the history of the goat as devil in for the Halloween spooks of it.
So excited to learn more about that too. But I love the Goat Man.
Yeah, good job, Goat Man. sexy muscle man, murderer, mad scientist, dog killer, et cetera. Extraordinaire.
Incredible.
That's it.
I love that. So my episode or my topic this week, I'm covering manene, which is basically this elaborate death ritual that is carried out by the Toraja people of southern Sulawesi, which is one of Indonesia's largest islands. Okay. So this is crazy. James sent this, like the topic to me, and the pictures are really intense. So I think we'll still probably share them on our Instagram.
Are they too intense for Instagram?
I don't know. It's like we talked about this before where we were like, is it okay to like post dead bodies on Instagram? But
oh, it's hard to say. It's very hard to say.
How do we do this podcast without it? But I know, it's dark. So these funerals and, you know, all the events following are very expensive, time consuming, and really like the most extreme that I've ever heard. Basically, the Toraja people, kind of similar to, I guess, like, you know, Day of the Dead or, you know, I guess like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Basically just like making death this like reverent, beautiful thing. Not necessarily, you know, kind of, I feel like our sad, like quick, bleak funeral process. Like, I feel like this is a much more elaborate one. So
is it more like celebration of?
Yes, it is more celebration of. The okay. biggest difference to me that will lead to why we have to post all these pictures is that these people believe that death is a gradual process and very social. So they believe that the spirits of the dead remain on earth until a death ceremony is held. So people will keep the bodies of their loved ones who have recently died in their homes, preserved sometimes for weeks, months, or even years until the family has enough money to be able to afford this elaborate funeral, basically. So
that's brutal.
Yes.
I mean, like, we did post the picture of that lady that the man kept in his house for like forever. So I feel like if we could post that, we could post this. I don't know.
Right? I know. We'll see. It's dark. So it's dark. They will keep this body wrapped up like a mummy in this special room. They feed it. They tend to it as if the person is just sick or sleeping. And they sometimes even speak to them in family meetings. And then after the death ceremony, then the soul will leave the body and begin its journey to Puya, which is the land of the spirits that they believe in. So basically, the longer they are able to keep this body, the more the family can save for the funeral, the bigger, more expensive it is. And sometimes these funerals can last for as long as 12 days, and they can cost as much as hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it kind of feels like a wedding to me too, like this like huge event. So they also include the sacrificing of a water buffalo. The more powerful the person who died, the more buffalo are slaughtered. So, right. So buffalo carcasses, including their heads, are usually lined up on a field waiting for their owner, who is in this sleeping stage. They believe that this dead person will need the buffalo to make the journey to the land of spirits. And so the more buffalo they have, the quicker the trip. So this slaughtering of all these buffalo, and it can be sometimes dozens of buffaloes, hundreds of pigs, are normally killed at kind of the climax of the funeral, which just feels wild. So there's dancing and music, and sometimes even these like young boys will catch the blood. Like part of this ritual is they will catch the spurting blood from these buffalo being slaughtered in these long bamboo tubes.
Dang.
Which is
intense.
It's really intense. And then there's also traditionally a cockfight that requires the sacrifice of at least 3 chickens. However, it is also common to have at least 25 pairs of chickens fighting against each other
to
get to 3 dying, I guess. And then on rare occasions where the person dies away from their home, family members often venture to the location and carry the body home. So these funerals are, you know, there's flute music and funeral chants and songs and poems and crying and wailing and all kinds of, you know, expressions of grief. But they also, in a very beautiful way, do not believe that death is, you know, an ending or a goodbye. They believe that the spirits of the dead continue protecting their family, that they never really leave you. So I love that part.
Yeah, that's nice.
Right. But interestingly enough, I think this is kind of odd to me. So Taurasians are largely Christian now, you know, from people either coming into their country and converting them or, you know, whatever. But it has not stopped them from continuing these very traditional funeral processes. So Manene, I should have said this earlier, I was kind of doing more like general Taurasian funeral stuff, but Manene is one of the rites, which is carried out every 1, 2, or 3 years, depending on what the family's traditions are. And this is the part that gets a little weird. So, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say weird. This is the part that kind of creeps me out. So it translates to care of the ancestors or the ceremony of cleaning corpses. And different websites kind of translate it as one or the other. But it's basically a way to honor these deceased relatives and to keep their ancestors' spirits happy so that they'll have, you know, better harvest, more good fortune in the next year. So long after the funerals were held and family members were buried, this ritual begins. And the family members come to Patani, which is a building that kind of looks like a house that has room to store several bodies. So they go to this place, they exhume the bodies of their deceased family members, and then they clean them. They leave them in the sun to dry, and then they dress them in new clothes. So it's kind of
to dry.
Yeah.
Like jerky. Yeah.
Like jerky. It does feel that way.
Okay. Go ahead.
So they dress them in these new clothes, and it's considered this time to bond with the dead. So it's very interesting. It's a time that they can also tend to the coffins. They repair, they replace broken parts of the coffins. And then the bodies are paraded around the community where they once lived. So they take these dead bodies of their family members throughout the community. So this parade also sometimes involves taking pictures with the dead body, even popping lit cigarettes into their mouths. Mm-hmm. They might take time to speak to the corpses. They even consider it like kind of quality time, or they might even feed them. And it normally ends with the family sharing this, you know, big Taurasian food meal, or the family worshiping it's worshiping at the Tongkonan traditional house after they return the coffin and bury it again. So there's normally some sort of celebration at the end. But I just think this is like one of the coolest and weirdest. I mean, kind of both parts, that it's like they keep the body in the house until they can afford this huge funeral. And then after that, they still go and get the body every couple of years, clean it off, have it like meet their children.
Is this something that still is part of their tradition? Is this like still happen?
Yes. So they're very welcoming of tourists, and even considers like they consider Westerners kind of adding to the prestige of the family. So the area is really remote and difficult to get to. So it really wasn't, you know, there weren't really missionaries or any of that until the early 1900s. And then a bunch of Dutch missionaries came over and converted them all. But there is kind of like this weird, like half Taurajan people are really excited about tourists coming in and seeing it. Half of them are more like, you know, we want to keep this a private thing for, you know, mostly our culture, our community. And so there are some of them that rely on that tourism industry to survive, even mm-hmm. just like selling souvenirs or giving tours. But I do think, I mean, it is something that they do to this day. So I think hypothetically people can visit and see this ritual. Yes, it's just it's a crazy long and meaningful ceremony throughout, like from the start, as I said, to the end. But it's this way that, you know, the younger family members can be literally introduced to their ancestors. And I do like the idea too of like death being this gradual process, or I imagine that's easier in coping in some ways, that it's not just a sudden stop.
Yeah, because here it's like if someone dies, like you try to make it happen as quickly as possible. It's like the funeral ideally is in a few days.
Right.
Like everything is very fast. And I always thought maybe that was, I don't know, like I guess maybe I'm thinking like back to like plagues and stuff, but like a hygienic thing mm-hmm. of like getting dead bodies like out of the space of the living quickly.
Right.
But I don't know. This is a very interesting – I've never heard of anything like this. It's fascinating. And it does sound like very meaningful and cool in certain ways. And then other ways, right. it's just so different than what we do here. It's like mind-boggling.
And it's also the idea that you would like kill all of these buffalo or do right. all these extravagant things when it's like they're not coming from a place that's an easy sacrifice, I'm sure.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. And the dead person doesn't really get to – wait, I mean, I don't know.
I know.
Like doesn't really get to enjoy the fruit of that.
No. You know. Except in their beliefs, they're like they need this buffalo to ride the next place.
So but it is intention. That is a reason. Yeah.
Yes. But it is, I mean, it's really interesting. And they like there's more. You can do so much research. Like I feel like I just kind of skimmed the surface. I guess maybe I did look up the kind of like why it started or where the ritual began. And there is a local legend that there was this hunter named Pong Rumasek, who hundreds of years ago found an abandoned corpse in the Taurajan jungle. And then he was moved by this stranger's, you know, unfortunate end, having no one around, and took care of the dead body and dressed it up in his clothes. And from then on, he was said to have, you know, all this good luck and bountiful harvests. Huh. So that's kind of the, like, you know, why they do it or what they, I guess, how it kind of started. But yeah. You know, it's mostly sort of lore at this point. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's a true story necessarily, but that's mm-hmm. kind of what they cite as why they do it and where it began, which is also pretty cool. But there's a lot you can look into on the science side too. I was looking at of like how they preserve the bodies, what they do to keep them in their house for, you know, months or a year mm-hmm. before they bury them, what they do to clean them after they bring them back from, you know, being buried. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff you can look into if that's interesting to you or if you would like to learn more. But it is, I think it's a really cool and different and long and unique kind of death rite. So I really thought it was a cool topic to research for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well done. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Amazing. Well, thank you all for listening. As Felicia said, next week we'll start our themed October episode. So we're very excited. And you might be able to send us ideas in Instagram if you have any that you really want us to cover. Maybe we'll even do some in November if we get good ideas. So thank you again for listening. And we hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.